Hi, and welcome to the They Call Me the Ghost podcast, a podcast for those looking for good stories, looking for adventure. Today's story is about the legends of the Greek gods, who have proven themselves to be influential still today. These larger-than-life deities are known for their power. So what could one of them possibly need from us now? All right, let's get started. Hello, it's the Ghost. Welcome to your weekly dose of the real world, where truth is stranger than fiction and things are not always as they seem. Take the Greek gods. Who are they? What do they represent? Have you ever thought about how they came to be or how they ended up? There are many theories out there, different versions and takes, but what is it all really? Today's story is just one piece to what is a great story in its entirety. Greek gods are nothing new to us, but here we have one in search of something from his past. And this was definitely a new and different request, one that none of us expected. They call me the Ghost. I was an agent for the CIA, but today I'm an independent operative working on the side of the mysterious and unbelievable. And today is the story of Helios, the Greek god, the sun god. What really happened after that unforgettable accident? Are you familiar with it? If you are, if you are not, I'm sure you haven't heard this before. Take a listen and enjoy. As always, I've changed the names of all involved and changed other exact details, keeping the feel and mood of what went on while protecting privacy where need be. Now, with this job, I have to tell you guys, a lot happened. It's a big job, not only to do, but it's a lot to get your head around. And what I've chosen to do is to break this job up into two parts. Some of you might be excited about that, some of you might not, but this is the best way I felt to get it all across to you. I just can't fit it all in the right way in 40 to 50 minutes. So this is part one of this job, of the story I'm going to tell you about this job. And next week, I'll follow it up with part two, and that'll take it to completion of when we got through this. So I wanted to be able to explain that to you guys from the get-go, and each half is pretty crucial to the other half. The way I look at it, I'm not really sure how you could understand what's all going on and follow along exactly with the experience if you don't hear part one and then part two. So I hope that all makes sense to you. And with that, let's get started. Okay. Well, just when things seem to slow down or it seems like there isn't much going on, something big happens. A request comes in that even if we tried to guess what might come in next, we would never have thought of this. Frankie and Jagger were not there. They had just left for a small errand that had to get done in Philadelphia when all this started. Harley and I were at the warehouse, and Ryder and Scarlett, they were off doing their own thing. And the request comes in, and I have to say it was good that Harley was there because I wanted to start digging into this thing right away. The request shows up, and I'm not even rushing over to it. You know, Harley and I had been working for a couple of days on some data organizing and archiving, and we're not running around all crazy. And that's my mood when I open this thing. I'm calm. I get it open, and I start reading. The requester tells me that his name is Niles Sutcliffe, and that he's an underwater archaeologist. He tells me that what he's gotten himself into, he cannot tell just anyone, and was hesitant to do so at all, but because of the references he received, he's coming to me. He also tells me that he doesn't come alone, and that he's paired up with a Leo Cardano, a cognitive scientist in Italy. That seems like an odd pair, but okay, that's when I call Harley over, and I keep reading. Niles says that this job, this mission, was to make something right, put things into alignment as they should be, put things back where they should be, and that the job was not for him. It's not for Leo either. He says they are the messengers. And they will help in any way they can, of course, but really they have been tasked with finding the right person or persons who would be able to get what this one man needs for him as he can't come and get it himself. Not now. He explains, bluntly but without much detail, that this request goes all the way back to and involves the Greek gods, the very ones that were honored so many years ago. And although now they seem far removed from us, they're not gone. Leo says the man, I'm using man because there isn't really another word for it, that is in need is none other than the Greek god Helios. Yep, the sun god, as we would know him. And his dilemma is that he gave something away all those years ago, and it's since been abandoned, and he wants it back. Now, I'm jumping out of my seat at this point. What does this guy mean? Now, there are a few more details and points in the request that lead up to this plea for me to come and meet him and Leo in Palermo, Sicily, Italy. There was no doubt this meeting was going to happen. I agree to meet them. I mean, it's not every day that I'm asked to do something on behalf of a Greek god, so I have to check this out. Harley and I both start digging. We need to know these people are real, and I want to find out more about what they've been up to, based on the credentials they provided. So we get to work. We have Niles Sutcliffe and Leo Cardano. First off, they are legit. Niles is an underwater archaeologist and has done some very cool things. With 71% of the world underwater, you can only imagine what's all out there. Believe me, there's way more than you think. Not that you probably think about it very often. But Niles has been a part of some interesting things. You know, in his years of nautical exploration, he's been on projects studying sunken treasure ships, lost cities, even detached remnants of a space shuttle. His job is pretty straightforward. It's archaeology, along with history. But what makes it so crazy is that it's all underwater, and to places many of us are not going to go. As for Leo, his job is not so straightforward and cut and dried. A cognitive scientist studies the behaviors of the human mind, how it works and behaves and processes, and it covers a lot of areas. Leo's focused a lot on anthropology and artificial intelligence, but he covers all things, you know, and how we've developed in our different societies and how things affect us. It's pretty interesting stuff, actually. Well, Harley and I basically spend the rest of that afternoon looking into these guys, and we learn that these two have paired up before on a sunken ship exploration, for example. Niles travels a lot for his projects. Leo is more home-based. He's based out of Palermo, and he's there most of the time. And our research shows that they've been pairing up every so often for about 15 years. Overall, these guys seem very into their different passions, yet they work very well together also. But how did they come together on this one? You know, we're interested to know. So Harley and I finish up our research, update the rest of the team, and then we're off to Italy so that we can find out more. And in Palermo, our meeting is set for later in the afternoon in a small restaurant. Apparently Leo has contacts and we're going to be able to use this restaurant. It's a public place, but we're going to use it as a private space for just a bit before they get ready to open for the evening. And we get there, and an older man lets us in, but then he locks up and disappears. Niles and Leo, they're already there, and they stand up to greet us. The place is simple, old school, and we take a seat. The first thing that we talked about, and the first thing that we need to get out of the way here today, is an understanding of the Greek gods, so that we're all on the same page with what's going on here in this situation. What are they? Who are they? Are they real? Do they still exist? Things like that. Let me tell you about what I learned about all of that from these guys, and then we can continue on with the rest of the story. So we're in the restaurant alone, and Leo and Niles start out by giving us a small history lesson and some helpful insight into the gods based on what they have learned and what they've been able to put together since their little issue here started. Niles tells us how all of what the gods are and how they work was created by the people. And then each god, Greek gods as they named them, grew into something much more than could even be possible for one man alone. It's as if they took all the possibilities within man, from rage and power to defeat, war and deceit, the good, the bad, and the ugly, just all things possible in man, exaggerated it, and then wrapped it all up into these little packages that they called these Greek gods. It all started with a collective energy and a belief. And that focused energy grew into something strong and long-lasting. And that energy still lives on, and therefore, so do they, the Greek gods. Things are just a little different now compared to how they used to be. People always want to know, are the Greek gods real? Because it's exciting in some way, or fascinating, or even if it's scary, it seems no matter what it is, there will always be people out there looking for this answer. Not everyone, but there'll always be some. How it was explained to us is that we're dealing with something, well, very fuzzy here. These Greek gods are real in a mythological sense and in a mythological place. Now, we created them and this place, and we did it so efficiently that it does have a presence, and there's nothing we can do about that now. They do not live here with us or among us, like we do with each other, but you might be able to think of it as they live on a different plane within where we are, and we put them there. All those years ago, there were many challenges for the people, things that both confused them and scared them, you know, angry seas and skies, good luck, bad luck, love versus hate, bravery versus fear. It all happens still today, but back then, they weren't as schooled as us, and they wanted answers. They wanted reasons for everything. And on one side, it's awesome that they wanted the logic of it all. On the other side, they had no idea that by blending their energies and thoughts together, that they could create monsters. Never underestimate the power of the mind. I mean, can anyone say for certain that it would be impossible to create this out of energy alone? Well, unless someone knows 100% of what our brains are capable of, I think not. We have energy currents moving through our bodies constantly. People are moving things with their minds. Energy is energy. Everything we do and are has to do with energy. With this situation, this Greek god situation, once the energy got strong enough and got its momentum, you don't just shut something like that down. It's not that easy. The Greek gods may be all but forgotten and their influence on our day-to-day lives in the past, but that does not mean that energy isn't still out there. And in the end, either way, whatever you think about it, whatever your take is on it, this thing with the Greek gods, it happened and it's here. And they're called gods, which also makes this tricky. And to help put it in perspective for us, this is how Niles explained that. Because we're in Italy, and with Leo being a very strict Catholic, Niles uses the Christian God as an example for us. Niles says that if you have something in your life that you believe in, like many believe in God, then it might help you to consider a Greek God, especially one of today, as more of a lost ball of energy. People are not worshiping these gods today in the human race continued just fine. But that doesn't mean it automatically eliminates them or the idea of them from our existence. Because if we're dealing with energy here, with energy comes power. With energy comes intimidation. Everything we are is based off of energy. And so no matter how you see it, the fact that this is before us is something that we need to consider as a challenge and a possible threat should we take this job. Should we run into an obstacle involving a Greek god, both Leo and Niles are clear that it's not going to be any physical man or woman as we've come to know people. These guys simply exist and are. But to also make no mistake, they are still very powerful. So, we get all of that out of the way. We all get on the same page. And then Leo says the name out loud, Helios, as if he's remembering someone or something from his own past. And he kind of is, I suppose, as he looks back on when he was approached. Little things had been happening, but it all started late one evening. It had been raining and dark and gloomy in the city for a few days when he heard the voice for the first time, a male's voice, lower and powerful. Now, being a man of cogsci, Leo first thought, perhaps, he was losing his mental competence. But he wasn't stressed. Things were fairly normal in his life, so could that really be it? But then he started to notice that the voices and sounds only happened when he was in his study. And although we had not seen his place yet, he did a very good job of describing how, along with being a scientist, he was a collector of sorts, sort of a result of his work. He's been to different places to study and assist in the analyzation of many different things, and over time, he was collecting things. Among his items were some that had to do with Greek mythology. The idea that humans somehow came up with this idea or reacted to something and saw things in this way. The whole Greek mythology thing was always fascinating to Leo. In his line of work, there are many things we as humans come up with in our minds to help us cope and understand things. Even today, the questions around the Greek gods still are many. But anyway, so some of the items that Leo has have to do with Greek mythology. For instance, he tells us that he has a piece of wood, supposedly from one of Poseidon's great boats. And he also has a book telling the legend behind that. He has teeth from a dragon, a sword that supposedly has magical abilities when in the right hands. He has paintings and writings, just a lot of things. And really, we're listening to this, and now Harley and I just want to get to his place so we can check it all out. But he continues. It was just two of his items that started this situation they found themselves in. One, a very old glass bottle that he has that's sealed up with water and has floating bits of gold on the inside. Supposedly passed down over time as gold from the sun god's chariot. And the other is a painting of the sun god Helios. To many, and even to Leo, they were what you'd consider, you know, support for his passions. But really nothing more than that, sort of its hobby. The painting was large, 4 feet wide, hanging on the wall. It's colorful, with the gold from the chariot, the big sun being pulled behind it, with none other than Helios at the reins, controlling his fiery horses. I mean, Leo describes it, says it's beautiful. But then it started to weird him out. It started to really weird him out when the sun god himself started following him across the room with his eyes. Now, again, being a man of perceptional studies, he at first thought nothing of it, thought maybe he was just thinking of it too much. But when he saw the grin, it stopped Leo in his tracks. And then he tells us about how one night, the night, that was about the third night of the never-ending rain, that was when he saw that smile. And he heard a voice, a male voice, that said, "It is you." Leo tells us that he was both a bit scared and annoyed at this point. I mean, was he hallucinating? Was he losing his mind? He just wanted it to be over. And so, not knowing what else to do, he replied. Said he challenged the painting and the strange voice. "Who was there?" he asked. He spun around, looking through the room for anything else, but he saw nothing. Looking back to the painting, he saw things had changed over there. Helios was no longer smiling at him, which was good. But now the glass bottle on the table in front of the painting, the one with the gold and the water inside, it started doing weird things. The water was swirling and the gold was floating and spinning around like a small tornado was forming on the inside of that bottle. And the bottle, it almost seemed to have a glow to it of gold, like it had an aura around it. The bottle starts to shake a bit, and a spark of light starts to shoot up from the top of this bottle. Leo said it was like watching a growing line of electricity. It buzzed, and it grew, and Leo just followed it as it grew up and across the room and over to his wall of bookshelves. He has a ton of books there, he explains, from psychology to science to folklore and legend. And this line of light made its way up the bookshelf and right to one particular book. And then there it sat, buzzing and touching on this one book. The book, Leo tells us, is one of his books on the Greek gods. You know, you can't help but sense a theme here at this point. The book, this particular book, is filled with stories about the rise and fall of the Greek gods. Leo looks to the painting, he says, to see if anything else is going on there, if it had anything else to say, and then he goes back to the wall of books. He walks over to it, and then he admits that he timidly, and with his hands shaking a bit, reaches up to get the book. The minute he gets his hands on it, the electric line of light disappears. The glow in the glass bottle goes dim and eventually fizzles out. So now, Leo says, he has the book in his hands, and he's looking to the painting, which seems all too normal now. So he goes over to the couch, sets the book down on the table, And when he does that, he says golden sparkly smoke puffed out of the book and it opened to a page all on its own. He looks down and as the smoke clears, he sees right there on page 97 to be exact, is the story of Helios, the sun god. Coincidence? No. And Leo, you have to know this, has read pretty much every version of the Helios story out there, like he has with all the main Greek gods. And he starts to look over this story in this book to help him remember what it says. I mean, all the stories seem to have the same basics, but it's the details that can change. And with this particular book that he has, this book itself, it's different. It's presented as telling the truths around the Greek gods. A little bit different, you know, different spin than some of the books and stories out there that just want to tell a fun story or make it creative. And on page 97 of this now glowing book, Leo reads the story about Helios. And just in case you're not familiar with the story of Helios and his son and the accident, let me sum it up for you. Basically, and most of the stories agree on this part, Helios' son, Phaethon, wanted to take the chariot out, thought he was old enough, thought he could handle it, all that stuff. And sure enough, he got a hold of it and did take it out. But trying to control the chariot and the fiery horses and the sun, it was a lot harder than he realized. And he couldn't do it. The whole thing was out of control. He was flying up and down and burning Africa. And Zeus finds out about this and realizes he needs to put an end to it. He has to take Phaethon out. Gets a thunderbolt and does just that. So Zeus took down Helios' son that day. And again, pretty much all the stories agree on that part. But then what happened? Well, most agree that Phaethon was killed and sent to live among the stars. But what all really happened here? What happened to Helios? What happened to the chariot? They say that Helios was so upset for losing his son and what his son had done in the first place by taking the chariot, he didn't even want to drive it anymore. And he didn't. But after some dark days and freezing temperatures, he realized that was the wrong thing to do and took up his job once again. Now, listening to that, one could assume that Helios was riding the same chariot that he had before. But that one was struck down by Zeus, wasn't it? Well, there are stories out there that say it was blown to bits and ended up in the Po River. That's a river running across northern Italy. But is that the final answer? Is that the right answer? Leo tells us more about the story from the Book of Truths, about Helios. And he tells us that this story explains that it was only Helios' son that was taken out by Zeus. And in fact, the chariot was not. I mean, let's face it. Zeus was Zeus and not one to miss his mark. He wanted to save that chariot for the future expected rides that Helios would take on. And it's not like he wanted to take out Helios' son in the first place, but for the sake of Earth, he had to stop Phaethon. And he got his target. The Book of Truths about Greek gods says that yes, it's true. Helios did not want to ride the same chariot that his son was struck down in. And to avoid that, he got rid of it. He worked out a deal with Hades, god of the underworld. And in exchange for the chariot, Hades would watch his son in the underground, which is the world beyond where the dead go. And with that chariot gone, spawning some of the other stories out there we hear today, a new chariot was provided to Helios. This was a pure favor on Hades' part because he had his own golden chariot. He had no real need for the one from Helios, but it could be used in future negotiations, exchanges, which did happen, with Poseidon, god of the sea. Poseidon was always known for his collection of ships and chariots to travel on and across the sea, and so there it was, and there it apparently stayed. At least that's the end of the story. The job of pulling the sun across the skies would soon enough be passed down to Apollo. But according to this Book of Truths, that would not stick. And it tells more of Helios, foretelling a time when he and his chariot would be reunited. Helios will have moved past the defeat of losing his son, the grief, and he will have taken the time to regain his power and control, and he would be ready to ride once again. And Apollo's time would come to an end. However, for this to happen, it must be done right and could not happen until Helios and the original Sun Chariot were together again. The book also states that once the two are reunited, a new calm will move in, taking place of the heartbreak and anger from times past in Helios's world. Now, I'm looking at Leo at this point. I mean, we all are. And what I'm thinking is, so Poseidon is the last known guy with Helios's chariot, and that now is the time to go get it, and that's what we're there for. Leo looks at me and at Harley, and he can see the look on my face, and he answers my thoughts. Yes. So the stories of the chariot being blown to bits and falling into the Po, untrue. The truth of it all was that the chariot was with Poseidon in the end. Not that that was the true ending of anything, just the end of an era. After all this went down, there were religious things that happened, God saving his people from Egypt. Beliefs were shifting, and more people came, making it harder for the Greek gods to do their thing like they used to. Per the Book of Truths, the Greek gods took on a new type of existence. They never really ceased to exist. Leo says that Helios is now ready. The bottle, the painting, the book, those were the main events so far for Leo. But they were also the gateway. And in the end, Leo says he came to understand that Helios came to him specifically because he was someone who could understand the truth and would believe. He knew the subject and was in the right place to help Helios get his chariot back. And now it was Leo's job to find the right person or group to actually go in and get the job done. So here's what we're looking at, right? Leo's the connection to all of this, knows most about what's going on here. Niles was brought in for his expertise. You know, he can help pinpoint the right area to be in. And we are there to go in and get this thing. Okay, well, Leo gets all of that out. And then this is where story time in the restaurant actually came to an end. You know, they're going to be opening soon at that point. But it's a good time, too, for Leo to do a check-in because he wants to know if we're still interested. Well, we are, of course. So the next step is for the four of us to go back to Leo's place and see for ourselves some of what he's talking about. I mean, there's no way we're going to miss that. So we accept the invitation and off we go. When we get to Leo's, it was pretty much like I pictured after his detailed account of what occurred there and some things about it, but I did not expect his place to be as big as it was. The driveway was long and lined with tall Italian cypress trees, and when we pulled up, it was like we were in an old movie. And the place itself was from a long time ago, and then they had this gravel driveway that opened up into this large circle in front of this old and grand stone villa. We get inside, and it's what you would expect after seeing the outside. You know, tall ceilings, paintings, old furniture. It was very beautiful. The home was passed down, as many there are, and this is where he has built his life. This is where his research lives and his discoveries continue, he tells us. When we get to the room where the activity is taking place, his study, it'd be hard to miss that painting of Helios, the one that he talked about. It's bright. The strokes of paint are thick and textured. Harley and I see that, and the glass bottle that Leo told us about, the one that holds the water and the gold. Those items stood out, but there's so much more than just those two things in that room. Leo really was a collector. And while walking around admiring all the art in the room, I keep the conversation going. And I ask Leo, how is he envisioning this all going down? What is it he would like to use us for exactly? Is this, you know, this chariot, a hidden or stolen piece of history that someone has that we need to go get? Is it something Poseidon still has, if that's possible? And if so, is a Greek god just going to want to give up something like that? And lastly, if Helios is a powerful Greek god, why would he need anyone at all? Leo pours himself a scotch, offering to all there, and then sits down in a chair that's obviously one he uses a lot. It's set off a bit, kind of over by the bookshelves. It's set up with an old lamp and a table next to it. The lamp clearly for reading, and the table is clearly for his scotch. He starts back up with how there have been all the changes over the years, and with so much activity in the Mediterranean, you know, certain times more than others, things got cluttered for the gods. The people were less organized, and they were changing, thus causing some confusion and chaos among them. Basically, the people were more and more distracted with themselves and less focused on what the Greek gods wanted, and there was less honor being directed toward them, breaking some of the connection and blurring their vision into the details on the ground. Over time, Helios, as a Greek god, lost track of the chariot that he once gave away. Although the last signal, which is the best way I can think to say it, from the chariot was tracked to Poseidon's treasure field below the surface, which has since been abandoned, it's believed he left that chariot, among other things, behind, and that it's still there. And so, and Leo says, this is where our journey must begin, with the hope being that we would go in, and I'm talking down into the Mediterranean, find this chariot, bring it back, Helios gets it, and all's well. You know, I look to Harley and we're thinking, okay, well, that sounds great. Of course, I can't wait for it to work out that smoothly. We should be home in no time. No, not really. What would be expected of us sounds like an extreme challenge. We're not sure exactly what we're going to get when we get down there, and we don't even have 100% certainty that the chariot is even there, as we've come to learn. Not to mention the little tidbit that Leo adds, which is that should Poseidon realize this is Greek god activity going on and he takes it as a threat, he could get upset and try to sabotage our mission. It's the same for Poseidon under the sea as it is for Helios in the skies. With all the people and the human clutter going on, his view into what's happening above and beyond is harder to see as well. We could be a surprise to him. And this moves us into more of Niall's area, where his expertise comes in. He fills us in about what he knows so far about what is beneath the Mediterranean surface in the area we're talking about. The original Temple of Poseidon was believed to be in the Aegean Sea, and that's where the common legends left it. However, a lot of time has passed since the beginning for these guys, and with time comes change, something to which even they are not immune. The common legends may have missed this, but the Book of Truths did not. In his underwater archaeological trips and discoveries, Niall and his teams did find something that piqued their interest, as far as finding anything belonging to Poseidon, although they couldn't confirm what it was. On the surface of a seabed table, they found the remains of a temple. This has been kept pretty quiet, because, well, with all things, who wants to draw attention to some find you know nothing about? To actually know you found something incredible, that's the win, and that's when it seems to become worthy, versus a big waste of time in the eyes of the public. If you find something, great, then you might want to show it off a bit, but not really before that. Look what's happening on Oak Island. You draw all that attention, everyone comes and watches, but really, there's not much of value to see. As far as anything with this situation here, the small and privileged group of those in the know, they weren't going to say a word until they had it figured out. And I'm going to interrupt this story just quick because I realize that here I am telling you things about all of this, you know, when they're not, right? And I want to explain that because you might be questioning it right about now. But understand, unless you are planning a dive down to the right coordinates and are going to dig around in there yourself, I think we're okay. Telling you this does not make you a threat to anyone, just so you know. If you think I'm creating one by talking about it, no. It's part of the deal on these things. I get to share. I never share any truly harmful details, and no one gets hurt. But it does give you something you didn't know before, and that's the point. And that's okay. All right, well, back to this temple that they've discovered. So Niles tells me that it was 5 years before we're there at this meeting in Sicily that they discovered this underground treasure area in the temple. Based on what he and Leo have been able to put together, Niles is certain that this is the area Helios is talking about. Although they did not see the golden sun chariot down there, or anything close to that for that matter, not that they expected to really. But Poseidon was the collector of many things, and although there were many clues that this was his temple, overall it was pretty bare. But bare or not, that's where we would be going. All of what Helios said pointed us to that particular location and place. And so again, that brings it all back to me and my team. The big question, would I take this job? We're about to discuss all of that when something starts to happen. The magnificent painting of Helios hanging on the wall started to mist. Leo immediately sets down his scotch, gets up out of his chair, and approaches the painting. We all are basically standing in a line now in front of this thing looking at it. After a moment of silence, I look to Harley and then I look to Leo and I ask him if he knows what's going on. He and Niles both simultaneously start shaking their heads. No. Leo does say, though, that he's never seen it before. The mist grows and starts changing from this soft white to a yellowish gold, and then it starts to shimmer. It gets so big and thick that it covers the painting and part of the giant wall behind it. We start to see something moving at the same time. It's just hard in that moment to even believe what's happening, so we're all just still standing there with our eyes glued to it. But when we start to see a large figure that appears to be coming through this mist, we all take a few steps back. Then this man, this biggest man, seems to walk right out of the wall and through the mist and into Leo's study. And we're all frozen at that moment. This was something extraordinary. And if we weren't all there together, I might even question if I was seeing it at all, kind of like Leo questioning the voices when he was by himself. This, what appeared to be a man, was big, striking in stature, good-looking, beyond any of our standards. Just from his size and the impression he made by entering the room, it was very clear that this man could crush anything that got in his way. This man, now with his feet solidly planted on the floor, starts looking around, and he's looking at each and every one of us, almost studying us, landing on Leo. The man takes a few steps toward Leo, and the whole thing is, it's just a wow. And here's what we're looking at. You know, it looks to be this giant man taking these heavy steps towards Leo. And he has this almost glowing gold dust puffing off his shoulders and trailing behind him. As he moves forward, Leo, he starts taking steps backwards in the opposite direction. And they go until Leo is basically backed into the corner and he hits his chair and he plops down into it. Out of fear and out loud, he asks the rest of us if we can see what's going on. And we just nod that we can. The rest of us, we've all come together to the side of where they are. And for what it was, if you just kind of stepped back and took a look at what was happening, it was pretty cool. This guy was absolutely not one of us, although he looked like us. Like a person, only bigger in size, stronger features, flawless skin. And when he moved, it was almost like his thick and curly hair, it moved in slow motion. It was the oddest thing. It's kind of hard to describe if you weren't there, but his hair moved a little bit slower than his movements, as did the glowing sort of mist that was coming off his body. In a low, strong, and slightly echoed voice, the man speaks. And let's just call him what he is, Helios. He wants confirmation that Leo knows and understands who he is. And Leo nods. Helios looks back to us, and then back to Leo, and he asks him, "Is this the team?" And Leo responds and tells him that it's part of the team. "I've already told Leo that should we take this job, I will be flying in more of my team." Then Helios takes a step back, more back into the room, facing all of us. He puts his hands out, and from the floor in front of us, more of the gold mist and smoke appears, rising out of the floor. It starts to swirl, and it grows, and it's raising up. And then, like a fuzzy hologram, these images start to appear. We see, what looks like almost a small statue, but it's moving. We see Helios. We see four fiery horses pulling the bright gold chariot, that he rides. The image is stationary at the chariot's flying and the horses are galloping through the clouds. He's showing us this vision so that we can see the chariot and see the point to all of this. Like the Book of Truths proclaimed, Helios would one day be ready and he would ride again. Now is the time. The gold-tinted vision that we were looking at soon faded, and as Helios walked back over to by where the large painting was, that started to mist again. Helios turned to face us as the mist filled the air behind him, and he pointed his arm out and down to the Book of Truths. and this light shot from his hand and hits the book. The pages flip a few, and then Helios puts both his arms out from his sides and was slowly sucked back into the mist of the painting. It was very hard to imagine that this was not even a man, but what would the word be? There's no real word to label who or what he was or what even just happened. Something not real, but real at the same time, enough to be effective. Never take the power of energy lightly. By definition, it's a force, a power, and we felt it. What we experienced was nothing from our world or our way of being, but it doesn't mean it isn't real in a sense. So what was it? What did we just experience? And we're sitting with that till the smoke and mist cleared. And then we walk over to the table where the book is. You know, maybe it has some answers to all of this. We want to check out what it was that Helios wanted us to see. We look down and the book is now open to page 62. Leo looks it over and tells us that it was open to the story of Poseidon. Niles joins him at his side and reads along as Leo reads it out loud to everyone. It said, "Not to be fooled. Although Poseidon would leave a trail of treasures in his wake, they were not for all to see, as Poseidon would protect what was his. To see what was before you, the book says to listen to the mother. The talisman, it is a protector, providing foresight and vision. And if we pay attention, she will show us the way." Well, Leo looks up and says, "It's a hint." And you can just see the wheels turning in his mind. Niles grabs the book from Leo and reads it again. And I ask anyone who's listening, "Who's the mother?" Well, both Niles and Leo are deep in thought. You know, Niles holding the book, Leo rushes over to this large wooden crate that he has in the room and he opens it and he starts digging through it. He's throwing things out of it, looking through a bunch of stuff. And then he finds this old wooden box, picks it up and brings it over to the table by the couch. So we're all back over there. We take a seat and Leo sets the box down for all of us to see. And then he opens it. The inside of this box is very old. It's lined with black velvet. Placed in the center is this teardrop-shaped silver piece, almost like a piece of jewelry, but bigger than any jewelry I know. The silver framing holds a white gemstone. It's iridescent, and although it's the whitest of whites, you can also see the colors, you know, purples, blues, and greens. I recognize the gemstone as the mother of pearl, and I say that out loud. And Leo nods, confirming that yes, it is the mother of pearl, explaining that this is the mother Helios was talking about. Niles snaps out of his deep thought and speaks out loud what it is that he's coming to realize and says that when they got down to the underwater area that he's sure Helios is talking about, there wasn't much there. It was disappointingly bare, in fact, kind of like you mentioned earlier. And you wouldn't expect to find much from something that old. But as archaeologists specializing in things like that, they knew what to look for, and they just didn't find what they would have expected to. Well, Niles reaches over and takes the box and then holds it up, sets the book down, and says that this is why, pointing to the box. He adds, "It was all there. They just couldn't see it as all." So now we're all starting to understand. So what Helios is trying to tell us is that it will be through the iridescent light of the mother of pearl that we will see what is really there. Of course. And this will make the job possible, because without the means, we would never find anything because we would never see it. These things are not for our world, after all. They live in the mythological space created all those years ago. Again, real, but not real. It's complicated, but it is coming together. We sit for a while discussing more aha moments in this whole thing, and in the meantime, I'm thinking, and I'm sure you might be wondering too, should I take this job? But why would we take on a job that's not even real for us? That's what they explained, isn't it? The Greek gods are not men or beings like us, existing with us. So why does any of this even matter? Well, it does. They don't exist right here with us, but they do exist on a separate plane within the space of where we are. We put them there. They have nowhere else to go. Helios has already made human contact. Do we really need more of that? If we can give him what he needs, he will be content. At least that is what we can take from Leo's Book of Truths of the Greek Gods, clearly telling us that when reunited, there will be a new calm, replacing Helios's heartbreak. He can write every day and do his thing. Like Niles said from the get-go, it will put things into alignment as they should be, and you can never have too much of that. If something Helios needs is in what is now our space, why not complete the task that could help avoid other problems? Because we don't even know what all those problems could be. I saw this Helios, and I know that whether he is like us in the sense of real that we know or not, it wouldn't really matter with what he's capable of. And I personally want none of that. And like so many of the jobs that we take and do, they really show the texture of where and how we exist. Our towns are parts of states, which are part of countries, which are part of the world, our planet. Our planet is part of the universe. And within all that, we have life and afterlife, dimensions, layers of time. We are not the only thing that exists in all that is. And the more harmony you can keep, the better. That's what I've learned. And that is why I did take this job. Because just like we don't need someone from another dimension or time coming to mess with us, we don't need this either. This job will take a little bit to get our heads around. We need to be organized. We need to be focused. We need to be ready. Going in with no other goal than to complete the mission. So what does that all mean for us? Well, I will need more of my team. We will need to have planning sessions. We will need a boat and more. It's a big one. So as you can see, that's why I broke this job up into two parts. There were good reasons for that. I mean, just to understand everything and get the history and the details of what happened here is a lot. Next week, I will be back with part two to this job. You will hear all about our trip down into the Mediterranean. What did we find? What did we have to do after that to get us through to an incredible ending? And so that is the end of part one to this story and the job I wanted to tell you about today. Don't go anywhere and come back next week if you want to find out what happened. Thank you for listening today to The Job. I appreciate you, I always do, taking the time to be here with me this Friday, this weekend, for the story. Like, subscribe, turn on your notifications, and until next time. And I will talk to you all soon.